and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh,
the
best for... Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, you're stating a shawl. This is AJ of InfoWars. Listen to the Shawliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shawliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Welcome, lovely folks. Clint Richardson filling in today for Shawly on the Cold Reality Radio News Show thing. Not going to be so much news today, sorry, if that's what you're looking for. Well, there's lots of bimbos on the Fox News channel you can watch. There's now lots of the same exact what I remember Alex Jones used to call info babes can now be found on InfoWars. Yes, what was alternative stream is changed into mainstream, of course. All the things he used to rail against that I remember listening to, for instance, the background images, the sigils and symbols and all the shit that's flying around in the back of Jones and his compadres when he used to rail against that. He used to tell us how it was, bad for you. It was hypnotic. It was all kinds of satanic messages. Now guess what? It's right behind him. All those things, of course, apparently when you start reaching that mass proportion, you have to start looking like everyone else, which, you know, gives you a clue as to the motive and intent there. That, however, is not the subject of today's conversation. I wanted to start out today by speaking of something that's a little near and dear to my heart, because it's really what got me into this whole conspiracy / truth / whatever movement we call this, and that is the notion of corporations. And of course, my whole shtick, my whole thing, my movies, everything I did was based around the corporation nation concept, and the fact, not concept or conspiracy, but that we are talking about a series of corporations that make up government. Now, what happened to me was a rarity, just because I came across this guy, Walter Burian, offered to help him over at Kaffir One make a documentary about these financial statements that I kept hearing about. These CAFRs, Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, and basically the audit of government, something you've never seen before unless you've specifically gone out and known what you're looking for. It's the, if you will, best kept secret or best open secret in government, holy grail of financial accounting for government. It is literally shows all the investment scheme that is government. And that's all it is a series of corporations that are required to invest in certain types of things, whether it's low interest loans to corporations, which we call corporate bonds, Or perhaps it's some other low yield, you know, could be a real estate fund. It could be all kinds of different funds. As long as the municipal corporation, which we call a county, a state, or a city, as long as that municipal corporation complies with the private association that writes the rules for the Government Accounting Standards Board, which is GAAP, G-A-A-P, Government-Approved Accounting Procedures. Ah, I can't remember all the acronyms that go along in the corporation nation. But what I can say is that by the time I finished my second documentary, I was astounded and knew that I was on to something that no one else, very few people out there in la-la land was ever really privy to. It made me understand what the structure of government is. I mean, hell, everybody should know by this time that the United States was started by a corporation, whether you're talking about the Virginia Company or the East India Company, all of those things. Right? I mean, we can't be stupid not to understand that we were a corporation when we started and still are a corporation. Specifically, the nation. The nation, this is what's so scary about nations, is that, right, when the United Nations came along, after it was fully rejected as the League of Nations because people saw right through it and knew what it was, they did basically just wait. You know, the typical trick is to wait in domestic markets, in state elections, that sort of thing. You generally wait 3 years. 3 years is the magic number. All those people who had protested before against some measure or some proposition that you want to pass, something you want to get on the ballot, and it gets defeated. Well, if you wait 3 years, that's just long enough for those people to move on to bigger and better things, and for the subject to die down enough where it's still in the public mind, but not exactly, you know, a hot topic anymore. 3 years is about the time you wait. You put it back on the ballot, and of course it almost always passes. Whatever it was before that didn't pass will pass again, because we move on to bigger and better things. And generally, when they put it back into circulation, it's a much worse bill. It's more clandestine. It's more secretive. It's got a lot more jokers, as they call them. You can look up joker. That's actually a legal term. Lots of things in there that you wouldn't have wanted before, especially, and now you're going to get. And, of course, we have a government that creates bills that have nothing to do with the title of the bill, which is one of the very, very, very clear things that some of those founders, as we call them, did not want to see. A lot of people have written or tried to write in bills that forces Congress not to add anything to a bill except according to what its title is. But when you, of course, look at things like the Obamacare, the health care bill, you find just so many things in there, from a private army to of little brown shirts for Obama. I can't remember what the army is called now. So much crap is in that bill that it's absolutely unbelievable how much they added in. And this was one of the things that Ron Paul is famous for, putting in these earmarks, additions. I'll pass your bill if you let me write in $1 billion for my precinct here, and so I can use it for something clandestine to make my, you know, constituents happy and rich. And that's essentially what Ron Paul was doing. Every time he voted no for a bill, he was, on the other hand, the biggest earmarker of them all. And of course he would write in, yeah, I'm going to vote no on this bill, but I'm going to write in, if it passes, I'm going to get all this for my district. It's got nothing to do with the bill, but I'm going to get all this stuff because I'm voting no, but really I'm saying, yes, I know it's going to pass, and so I'm going to get all this stuff, right? This is how they operate. Ron Paul is no different than any other crook in you know, just like Trump is no different than any other crook out there. It's just, you know, it's the flavor of the day. Ron Paul led a movement that was really not led by him, but by people like Jones. I mean, what can I say? It took me a while to understand the problem with libertarianism, which I don't think I'll go into because it'll just piss people off and make them turn away. But, you know, I tried to get involved with the Libertarian Party, and then I instantly realized that its pride and joy is the fact that it's completely unorganized and will essentially never win. So it's, it's a little adversarial to the normalty in that process, has no chance of ever succeeding. And I think that's the point, of course, the point of those types of things. Anyway, and it just goes back to the corporation. Of course, all political parties are private associations, which in U.S. code is defined as corporation, or i.e. a person, a artificial person, where many people become one voice. Yes. Sound familiar? Like a nation? But everything really became clear when I started seeing globalism for what it was, when I started understanding that pension funds were almost solely responsible for the growth of globalism. That's public pension funds. Yes, public pension funds. See, I have such a problem with... Nothing worse in my mind than pensioners. I think pensioners, are probably the worst people out there because of the fact that they complain. They actually complain about welfare. And whether it's because they have no clue what's actually happening behind the scenes even of their own pension, or because they choose not to recognize the fact, I don't know which one of those is the case. I get the feeling, though, that most people have no idea how their pension works. They just think it's going to be there, kind of like Social Security. They just think it's going to be there. It's going to be there that the state, the corporation will never declare bankruptcy and thus wipe out the pension. No, that can't possibly happen, right? So public pensioners, you know, I get it. I took welfare. I took unemployment insurance. I actually went to college on unemployment insurance. It was wonderful. Great. I mean, I'm not complaining about it at all. What I'm complaining about is pensions. Because pensioners are the loudest complainers about welfare. Welfare got me out of a very, very bad situation after 9/11, where I was working for the airlines. Airlines were closed. Airlines were laying off people left and right. They gave us a furlough where I was going to be gone for 20 months before I could return to work. And I could take unemployment. Well, hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's great. That's wonderful. I kept my flight benefits and everything. It was great. So what I'm trying to pull up here, something, my apologies, trying to talk and do that at the same time. We have this really crazy sort of a setup where people do not know. People do not know that the taxpayers are paying for public pensions. I don't know why it's not clear. It's very obvious, right, in the financial reports, again, which are the audits of government. But you have judges, for instance, that are out there whose pension funds, some of the police and firefighters, whose pension funds are strictly taxpayer funded. I mean, I can't I can't stress this enough, and this is why I call public pensions. I basically call it welfare for the middle class. It's just something that's unknown. I think it needs to be known. I think this whole pension system, it's one of the worst parts of that sort of communist movement to promote unions. Because these are very much, you know, you got the teachers union, for instance, in California, one of the largest pension funds. You have no idea how much power these pension funds actually have. Why do they have so much power? Well, it's not what you think. The power comes from the voting, the shareholder voting. So I'm sitting here, I'm a good little government employee, I'm working for the man, and the man says, well, hell, I'm going to hire as many as I can of you. Why? Why do we need so much redundancy? Why do we need so many government employees? Do you ever wonder why? I mean, there's always a reason. Nothing in politics is ever an accident. So why do we have the red? Why do we have the bureaucracy in these corporations we call government? I will tell you why. You see, it's all about extortion. It's all about exaction, the taking of something that is not your due, the worst kind of extortion. It's all about the extortion. How do I extort from a people unless I first enrich them a little bit, take them above their poverty level, take them, give them some benefits, right? Give them, say, hey, I'm giving this to you because I'm the man. And you're my employee, you're my agent, and I'm going to treat you right. And so I give you a little thing called a public pension. What's the goal? What's the purpose of hiring so many freaking completely illiterate people into government? You don't need to know much. You're just going to do a redundant job anyway. The point is, the more people that these municipal corporations, these states, and the federal government can put into government, can justify putting into the governmental system, that includes the military, the more people they can sign up for the pension funds. Well, why does that matter? Because taxpayer money is collected, taxed, extorted from everybody else to pay for those pension funds. Okay, but that's for the employee. That's there. No, it's not. That's not what a pension fund is for. A pension fund is justified because it pays benefits to employees. Justified for that purpose. But that's not what public pensions are for. Public pensions are massive, massive, massive freaking investment schemes. The typical pension fund, and I can't think of any exceptions to this rule, will have its top benefactors, its top investment corporations, who it's investing in, will be Apple and Microsoft. It will be banks, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citibank, etc. Sometimes in the tune of $1 billion just in one bank. That's stock ownership. Okay, great. The next thing you'll see is Exxon, perhaps some other oil companies out there. Great, great. Well, hundreds of millions of shares in each of these corporations. You go through the reports. When I show people reports for pension funds, especially the CalPERS pension fund, the largest one, and you look at the stock investment that these things hold, that government holds, quote unquote, in trust on behalf of the employees. When you see what government is invested in, what these pension corporations are invested in, that are public pensions especially, I mean, literally, if you don't shit your pants, there's something wrong with you. When you see that government is the main shareholder in every freaking corporation out there, I'm not saying one corporation or the other. See, you're all trained to think that George Soros is some big shot guru dude out there. No. Everything happens for a purpose. Everything is organized into... What is George Soros? George Soros, he is the CEO of a company called Hathaway, whatever the hell it's called. Right? He's the CEO of that corporation. When you go and you see the pension funds and their investments, and you see that as far as Berkshire Hathaway, you see that George Soros owns about 2%, 3%, maybe 10% of the stock, whereas what's called institutional investors, private corporations and government agencies, and all of the trust or pension funds that they have created and used to hide their investments. When you see that institutional holders are the main shareholder of Berkshire Hathaway, you realize instantly the same thing you realize about Bill Gates. Bill Gates is CEO of Microsoft, or was. I'm assuming he still is. But you see he only has 1% to 2% of the stock in the corporation. Well, where did we get the idea that Bill Gates owns Microsoft? Where did we get the idea that Berkshire Hathaway is owned, that it's his company? It's not his company. It's the shareholder's company. Ownership is only known through shareholders. Well, a 10% shareholder is not the owner of a company. It might be that could be called the part owner. Could say that he's got a nice little share of voting rights, but not enough to ever control the company like government does. You see, all those different pension funds, all those investment schemes that government runs, and there's thousands upon thousands. I mean, keep in mind, I can't even remember the statistics now, like close to 200,000 governments in the United States. These are local governments, all the agencies of government, all the pension funds, all the individual funds, all so many. It's mind-blowing. And they all have investment schemes. Per the law, they're required to, because it's the only way they can justify holding your tax money is to invest it. They can't just hold it and say, oh, well, we're not going to spend your money. They have to put it into a fund. And those funds each are designated for a specific purpose that is non-taxpayer. This is why they separate government financial reports into governmental and non-governmental finances. See, this is the true audit of government. This is the audit of the Federal Reserve. You want to know anything about the Federal Reserve? Go and get its 600 or so page comprehensive annual financial report. They're lying to you. They've been lying to you for a long time when they tell you there's no audit for the Federal Reserve. In fact, Ron Paul's bill tells you what the audit of the Federal Reserve is. It tells you it's the CAFR. It tells you it's the same thing that goes to the Comptroller General. So what does Ron Paul do? Very clever. Whoever did it for him, I don't know. Freaking Freemasons. Fucking Ron Paul creates a bill. And the bill goes after the one part of the law, one single part of the law, one part of the audit law, or I should say the Federal Reserve Act, that has nothing to do with changing the actual CAFR, the actual audit of the Federal Reserve. He goes after something completely irrelevant to what Congress receives and it requires every year, which is the audit of the Federal Reserve, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. It's required of every government corporation. It's required of every corporation from Target to Walmart, all right? But it's specifically corporations of government. This is why your cities, which are municipal corporations, your counties, your states, everything in between, they're all fucking corporations. Now, I want you to start thinking about this for a moment, because your taxpayer money is collected, and the number freaking one thing that goes into the budget, that goes into the taxpayer money is collected for, you'd say education or war, right? Department of War, which we call the Department of Defense. Nope. No, you'd think that would be the main thing, but quite often the one of the number one things collected for is pensions. Pensions. public pensions. That's the pension for everybody in the federal government, and that's the pensions in all the states where the federal government actually contributes. When you hear that the government is contributing something, that is a contribution of taxpayer money. It can be nothing else. Generally in the form of debt towards future collections of taxes. When government matches funds, where do you think those funds are coming from? Taxpayer money. But no, I'm a pensioner and I pay into my pension. All the money that I pay, no, you pay probably 30% to 50% and government pays the rest. Every single employee that it can hire, that it can then enter a new fiction, a new member into the pension system, the more money that government can extract from the taxpayer base and put into its massive investment scheme, which is again solely almost responsible for globalization. Because government owns every corporation in the world, not just in the United States. Whether it owns the full shares or just part of the shares. Again, don't forget, we have the Canadian governments. We have the German. We have the France. We have England. We have all these different pensions. Canada's pensions are huge. Not like the United States. All of these governments around the world, all invested in the same corporations. Who are the shareholders for Microsoft? Canada, United States, CalPERS, CalSTRS, the Atlanta School District Pension Fund. All these different those are the owners of corporations. You think, well, Bill Gates and some other private investor. No. You got to be absolutely a nutcase to actually think that. You have exceptions. You have Walmart, which still keeps it in the family. Of course, it's not our family. It's their family, always. But I can't stress this enough. When we start looking at the structure of the corporate world out there, all the things you always hear about China, why did China get built up? Because the United States, through corporate bonds and other forms of extraction of money offshore, built up China. All those investments that built up China and building up the third world countries to serve the goyim of America and our consumer habits, because you have to have a consumer nation if you're going to have a slave nation. You know, all that... It just amazes me when I put these pieces together. So I started putting these pieces together. This is what got me over the hump to understand that most of the shit I was hearing on the radio is complete crap. The worst thing I hear is that corporations own government. You got to be a freaking moron to actually believe that. When you have the actual audit of government that says government is the owner of corporations. How do you declare ownership? How do you show ownership? You show me one corporation that has ownership in government by showing me a stock certificate that says I own government. Oh, but Eustace Mullins was wrong. He was very confused by the same bullshit that comes out of people like G. Edward Griffin, who writes a book not knowing really anything about finance, does a cancer movie not really knowing anything about cancer. The guy, he took it and ran, and he created this monster that when you actually go and try to prove some of the things in these books, The Creature from Jekyll Island, you find that you can't prove these things. There's no mystery behind the creation of the Federal Reserve. Just because people met at an island, that's no different than meeting in a fucking boardroom at Denny's. You're meeting on an island, so what? You're just as private as anywhere else. It's just that these guys love their creature comforts. They love that old freaking haunted mansion feel. That's fine. There's no mystery behind the creation of the Federal Reserve. It's all lies. I exposed that a long time ago. And I remember that one of the most disturbing parts of that is that when the Ron Paul people, the Ron Paul website people, not Ron Paul's campaign, but the Daily Paul people, when they got a hold of that and someone had posted it on there, their response was not to deny it. Their response was not to try to discredit it or try to do anything. It was simply, oh, well, this guy doesn't have an audience. We looked at his website. We looked at his web traffic. He doesn't have that much of an audience. We don't really need to worry. Oh, well, that was 6 years ago. So 5 years ago at the most. So yeah, you're right. I didn't have the audience then, but I had a lot of people contact me and say, "Yo, you're an asshole because you're tearing apart our hero, Ron Paul." And I tried to show them that we heroized Obama in exactly the same way. We put a Superman costume on Obama, just like we put a Superman costume on Ron Paul. Do the same thing. You glorify this guy for something he's not, this little old man, who, by the way, one of my listeners pointed out, and I thought this was one of the most profound things that any listener had sent to me. She said, well, Ron Paul claims to have delivered thousands and thousands of babies. Delivered. Delivery. That means to abandon. So Ron Paul is that doctor, apparently, signing birth certificates. Ron Paul is the guy signing your children away to the state for you. He's the witness. He's the doctor. He's the principal's main agent, the devil's main agent. No one ever talks about that. No one ever asked him about that, certainly. I wish someone had, because I'm sure the look in his face would have been like, oh, my God, I could not even have imagined someone actually asking me in public, you know, what does it mean when you sign a what happens when you sign a birth certificate? Why didn't you in good conscience not tell the people what you were doing? Why did you continue to allow people to be tricked into signing away their children to the state as wards of the state? Why would you do that? Why would you cause a mother to abandon their child? And we know the reason why, because he's part of the pirate crew. But you got to put out certain pirates out there. You know, Blackbeard with his personality. You got to put out certain pirates that are, you know, a cult of personality. They're still pirates. They're still stealing from you. They're still earmarking every bill and voting no at the same time. You know, it's just how it's got to work. It's how this system got to work. So, what's the difference between pensions and welfare? Now, of course, the loudest complainer of welfare are these people on pension funds who literally receive welfare in the form of taxpayer money being paid into the system. Now, you're talking about welfare. Welfare is I mean, it's literally crap. It's nothing. It's nothingness. I mean, here's how it goes. How much do we spend on welfare was the question. This was budget info. Let's see, I'll get you the website here. Whenever you see a pie graph that is meant to represent all government spending, you'll probably see a graph like the one at usgovernmentspending.com or the one at Wikipedia, which shows welfare spending is 12% of the federal budget. 12% of the federal budget. Oh, my gosh, that's as much as education. The problem with that, though, is it's a total. Government has no spending category called welfare. What somebody calls welfare is very subjective and undefinable. So let's talk about this. What is this 12% that goes to welfare? And why do you think I call public pensions welfare? For the middle class. Do you think some of that budget may go to welfare? May go to pension? I don't know. Let's find out. Let's see what's going on here. The Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, does have a spending category called income security. Now, you think of welfare as something you do for the poor. You think of it as something you do through your church, maybe your local church. The government thinks of welfare as income security. Okay? Security, Securities and Exchange Commission, in other words, when you talk about security, you're talking about something tradable. You're talking about money that you can invest and give the benefits of the investments to someone else while keeping the majority of the investments and their gains and reinvesting them in creating massive empires of globalization, owning all corporations, which is what we have seen happen to this point in history through the pension system. Government now owns all corporations. I kid you not. This is what my second documentary was all about, the Great Pension Fund Hoax. There's two pie graphs were linked here, and it says it divides the total spending of welfare to get a 12%. In 2009, accounts categorized income security accounted for $533 billion in spending, according to the government printing offices. And here's the six distinct sub-functions where that 12% or $533 billion actually goes to. Number one, where does frickin' that 533, which is, you know, today it's comparable or more, maybe up to the $600 or $700 billion that's been in grant. Where does it go? Where does the 12%, where does the pie chart divide it up and show that it goes? Number one, general retirement and disability insurance. Retirement. That's public pension funds. That's the number one place welfare goes. Disability insurance, of course, comes through Social Security, which is just another big, massive pension fund for everyone else. That's all it is. It's just a big pension fund scheme. They call it socialization or Social Security, but it's just a pension fund. It's just an investment scheme. And when you see what it's invested in, you say, holy shit, it's not invested in anything tangible. It's invested in nothing but debt instruments, which would not be cashable at some point. Anyway, so general retirement disability insurance, that's number one on the pie chart. Federal employee retirement and disability is number two for that $533 billion spent supposedly on welfare of people who can't afford to eat. Okay? So all those people who are so, so loud in speaking against welfare, you're speaking against yourself because it's the thing that's funding pension funds. Number three, unemployment compensation. Number four, housing assistance. Number five, food and nutrition assistance. Oh, well, there's your food stamps way the hell down the list. Really small part of the pie chart. And then number six, other income security, which again means investments. Three out of the six income security sub-functions of welfare, according to the Office of Management Budget for Government, are for pension funds. Pensions and unemployment, same concept, because what is unemployment paid from? It's paid from a fund that is invested in stock and other securities. The three remaining sub-functions after that comes to a cost combined $284 billion. Remember, this is back in 2009, but the model stays the same. All right, so what's left after the pensioners are exacted, after the taxpayers are exacted for on behalf of all the public pensioners, which we will get nothing of, no retirement for us, just for them. Okay, they're going to match the funds. Why do they have so many employees? So that they can keep contribute more and more each year to the pension fund, which is money they will keep, they will invest, and they will loan out to corporations. So that Target, Walmart, and frickin' Raytheon can expand their operations. Well, shit, if you can get a no-interest loan from government, why go to a bank? What do you think all government's assets are? It's practically all loans. Hell, they got $1 trillion of student loans or something like that in California. It's amazing when you see it all in front of you. Three remaining subfunctions leave us with $284 billion for the entirety of the poor, the entirety of the actual concept of welfare. But wait, that still doesn't tell the whole story. When you take a more detailed look at each of these subfunctions, which this guy, particular guy who wrote this article, did, you get an idea of how much money is actually spent on truly the concept of charity or welfare. Welfare and charity are not the same thing. If it was charity, they'd call it charity. It's not. It's an investment pension scheme. Period. End of story. And scheme is the correct word. I'm not just putting that word in there. That's actually what they call it officially, is a scheme. It's not a scheme when it's criminal. It's always a scheme. Pension scheme. What I found was that even in the remaining subfunctions, food and nutrition, housing assistance, and other, whatever other is, that not all of that spending was spent on the poor. What a shocker. So you got this nice pie graph. And in the other category, income security sub-function, that is, how much money was spent by categorizing into four different categories? You have non-directed, you have a category that starts out with not directed at the poor, or money that is earned, that is defined as welfare not targeted to the poor. The poor may use these programs, but just being poor will not qualify you for these programs. So money not directed at the poor, that accumulates about 60% of the chart. Not directed at the poor, okay. Direct, which is welfare that's direct money to the poor, it's a very small category. I would say 15%, maybe 20%. You have indirect, which is money paid to third parties on behalf of the poor. Oh, there's your corporate scheme. There's all your private charities and associations that, of course, are for-profit when they say they're non-profit. It's all a bunch of bullshit. Can't be a corporation and we have no gains. Well, I'm non-profit. Well, what were your gains? Oh, we gained 100-something million this year. Oh, but you're non-profit. Yeah. But you had gains? Well, certainly. We're a corporation, after all. We have people to please. Boy, you're non-profit, but you made gains? Well, yeah, but we put those gains into investments. And therefore, it's not a gain on paper. As long as we put it, just like government, as long as they put your taxpayer money into an investment scheme, transfer it into a different fund that's designated for something non-taxpayer, say a bridge in 10 years that'll never get built, and they'll just, oh, the money will just disappear. You got to understand, non-profit means shit. All you got to do to hide your profit is invest your money, because then your money is invested in something that's not accessible. It's great to give. This is why the government loves giving loans. You give out low-interest loans. You've got a financial instrument that says you have $300 million, but you've loaned it to Citibank. But you've still got the instrument that says, hey, that's an active loan. It will be paid back with interest, or with very little interest, or with no interest. And you can still use that to invest. You still have the money. You've just loaned it to somebody else. But what's great about that is, well, sorry, our hands are tied. We have no money to support taxpayer needs. Sorry, we have massive, massive investment schemes. Plus, we have to pay all of our pensions. We have to pre-fund our pensions so that we have even more money to play with. I mean, for God's sake, the post office was nearly put out of business because, for one reason and one reason only, because the Congress required the post office to pre-fund the pension fund, the government pension fund. That meant taking out loans. The post office actually had to take out loans in like 700 million or billion, I can't remember, massive amounts. in order to pre-fund the welfare, the public pension system, the federal system, and the state system. All right, that's what happened to the post office. It was going through all that stuff, and you heard all the in the actual financial reports, you find that the post office people practically begged Congress to not force them to pay to prepay pension funds because it's going to bankrupt them. And that's exactly what it did. But you see, it's a corporation. A corporation has to appease its stockholders. In government's case, government has no stockholders. But let's not forget whose government it is. So, massive corporate structure. It's just fucking amazing to me that nobody knows this or really has thought about this. But what this led me to? Well, I guess we should finish this first. Poor in the middle class, these are tax rebates that poor in the middle class people qualify for. So already we've diminished this $284 billion by looking and seeing where the money actually goes. And it doesn't go to the poor. It might go into an investment scheme on behalf of the poor. It doesn't mean it's actually going to the poor. It goes to corporations that are supposedly supposed to take care of the poor, like when you see the Red Cross building in Haiti and pretty much death camps set up all around them because the Red Cross isn't releasing any money. Yeah, that kind of thing. The vast majority of money then spent on the income security function of the government is spent on programs not directed at the poor, or programs where the income must be earned. If you want to know how I categorized everything, here's how I did it. Unemployment and pensions are classified as not directed at the poor. Okay? Unemployment and pensions. So when we actually look, we find that the federal government spent out of that $533 billion, out of that 12% of the entire budget, with the excuse of using it for welfare, the federal government only spent $191 billion on welfare for the poor. The rest of that went to either pension funds or some other form of investment or corporation that would then invest the money equally. It doesn't matter. It's all going into an investment fund. All right. So you got $300 million or so of that money, collected taxpayer money for welfare that did not go to the poor. That's just about a record, about as bad a record as any company out there. From the United Way to Red Cross to any of those bastards out there who collect so much money and use it all for advertising and investing and all that stuff. The whole thing is a fraud. Do not contribute to these companies. You want to go help the poor, go do it yourself. And you know what? I recommend that because you'll get arrested if you actually try to help the poor. Okay? Because you're trying to do something that is against the welfare system, against welfare, against it. Welfare is not there to help people. Welfare is there to collect money on behalf of poor in order to invest it for government. You go try to help the poor for real. You try to send them food. You try to get them help. They will arrest you and put you in jail because they didn't give you permission to do that. That's how fucked up this country really is. And they'll put you in jail and they'll invest in you there, give you a CUSIP number, and put you to work. I live in a free country. Franchise. Yes. So $191 billion on welfare for the actual poor. That other $300 million just kind of disappeared. That would be 5.5% of the actual budget instead of 12%. Unbelievable. So $191 billion total for food stamps and all those things that we all complain about. But don't worry, that other that other 200-something million was invested in your name. Don't worry. And that's probably my biggest problem, is all this stuff's being done voluntarily. You know, when you give to a pension fund, you're doing so voluntarily. You don't have to. And you don't care. You don't care that government is investing on your behalf. Then you contribute to your pension fund. And by the way, contribution means to give, not to borrow, not to let hold, but to actually give up. So you, once you contribute something, you don't own it anymore. That none of the money in the pension system belongs to pensioners. Yes, you can get it out at any time. You can take the hit and not get any of the profits, but you can always take out what you put in unless you're fired, right? But you can never take the profits that they're earning for themselves. Yes, benefits are paid. Granted, my mom is a pensioner. She's a pensioner with CalPERS, thanks to my dad working for the state. Not happy about it. But what I want to tell her, is you have to understand why it is that my dad had a job, why it is that he was in the military, why it is. Because the more people you can hire in government, the more people and the more money you can collect for Glozman. I'm telling you, pensioners, you're all responsible, and so are we as taxpayers, because we have no idea what we're doing out here. We're contributing money. We're paying our taxes, federal taxes, to a massive war corporation. I don't know what to say. Now, when we go and we look at the same year, well, no, actually, this is total government spending in the United States, federal, state, and local, for the fiscal year 2013. I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen how much money is going where. All right? 2013 budget. Government welfare, 0.6 trillion, which is 600 billion. Okay, we just covered that. It was $533 billion in, and we know that that's going to go down to about $250 billion when we finally get down to what is actually being given to the poor directly. All right? And we see national defense at $0.9 trillion, so $900 billion. We see 0.8 trillion going towards government education. We see 1.1 trillion going to government health care. And on top of the frickin' list of total government spending in the United States, fiscal year 2013, federal, state, and local, $1.1 trillion, $1.1 trillion in taxpayer money, or what will become part of the budget deficit, in other words, $1.1 trillion goes to government pensions, public pensioners. Government pensions, which are judges and police and all the different, you know, Congress. I mean, there's so much going on in there. There's millions. There's hundreds of millions of employees in the federal government. Remember that. $1.1 trillion went to public pensions just in the federal government and... this is federal, state, and local. And welfare was 0.6 trillion. Now, I got to ask you, why aren't you complaining about yourselves? 6 trillion, for God's sake, $6 trillion to the poor, which are 600 billion? Oh my God. Wait, what about your $1.1 trillion that you're taking out of everyone else's pockets, essentially? To match the funds that you are contributing, which oftentimes are very little, so that you can have this massive retirement that's way beyond the means of most of us out here. That's way fucking more than any freaking government welfare check is going to be. See, the difference between these two categories is one is voluntary and one is not. That measly little $200, $300 billion goes to the fucking entire country to feed the entire country's poor, to house them, to do critical, you know, that is a very small amount of money compared to the pensioners, half of which comes from welfare, to be extorted and exacted up to the pensioners, to the same funds. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say. The difference is the voluntariness, the notion that, hey, well, I'm paying into this pension fund, therefore it's my right. I deserve to get a pension, a welfare check every fucking month when I retire. I deserve it. I'm not like those poor people, those horrible, horrible poor people out there. They're horrible for being poor. Oh, that they would take out of my pocket to fund their darn gullets, their stomachs. Oh, they're so horrible. But, yeah, don't touch any of that money that's coming in to match my funds in my pension fund, because, you know, that's a $600, that's a $6,000 check I'm going to get every month for my retirement. You know, that's a $4,000 or $3,000 check I'm going to be getting for my retirement. Don't you dare mess with my pension fund welfare. But those damn poor people on their welfare, that's completely different. Our welfare is called a pension. Therefore, it's justified. It's wonderful. It's great. But I can't believe that they take money out of my pocket. Even though I just, you know, I'm stealing from your pockets, I can't believe that they're taking out of my pockets to pay for those damn poor people and their welfare. But now, I don't know if it's people don't know, don't care, or just it's we're so corrupt at this point that the complicity is just in the up and nobody gives a shit. But that spells about $1.3, $1.4 trillion going into the pension system. Okay, not to employees. This doesn't go to, I want you to understand, this doesn't go to employees. This goes into investments. All that money is invested. The return on the investment is then partially given to the employees, and most of it's invested back into government or used to pay the loans that they've either given or received. It's just this massive, massive thing. I don't know what to say on this. I really don't know what to say, but it's just, to me, one of the great delusions that has formed the American public, because it's made us all conspirators, co-conspirators. It's put us in a position where we have a stake. If you're working for some government position, and there's a lot of government jobs out there, if you're working in some public or private pension system, you are, I just don't know how to say it. You're complicit. You're allowing government to take your money every month, along with millions of other people. And you're saying, government, I'm going to trust you to invest this money correctly. And, of course, you're tricked into believing, well, government says it invests my money sustainably. Sustainably it invests my money. No, actually, it invests in the worst possible fucking things you can imagine. The weapons manufacturers, to the banks that they're also giving loans to, TARP and all that shit. They are the owners of those banks. I don't think people get this. I don't think that people. But the banks own the Federal Reserve. What do you mean the banks own the Federal Reserve? What the how can a bank own the head bank? How can a bank, or a banker, for that matter, own the Federal Reserve? The Federal Reserve has no stock, you idiots. There's no stock investment. The stock that is, and you can read this in the damn Federal Reserve Act if you just take the time, there is stock in the Federal Reserve. Every bank is required to purchase it, and they can only purchase a certain amount, like 100 shares or something like that. It's purely symbolic, has no ownership value to it whatsoever. This is very clear, clearly written in the law. It's a requirement. If you don't have the stock, you don't get to make the funny money. You don't get to print the United States script. If you don't play membership to the Federal Reserve and give it its tribute, you think you're going to just be able to walk in and create a bank and not be a member of the Federal Reserve and be able to use the reserve system to actually create money on money out of thin air, loan people money that you don't have? Just create a journal entry that says, well, we just loaned $1 million to someone that we didn't have. Now they owe us that. Here's a financial instrument we can invest. Right? You think you're going to have the power to create United States money just because you can open a bank? No. You have to be a member of the United States Federal Reserve System to have that funny money creation power. Oh, but banks own the Federal Reserve. Don't be a fucking idiot. Don't be so stupid that you would actually think that someone, something public, can own something private. That's ridiculous. That the entity that makes laws is owned by somehow by this list of bankers. Excuse me. I remember when I came out with all this stuff, calling bullshit on all these people, calling bullshit on what's-his-name, James Corbett for his crap documentary, calling bullshit on the Ron Paul movement. Man, I made so many enemies. When you just start destroying people's heroes and you know, showing them standing next to Zachariah Stitchin, in a Masonic lodge, hiding his face. When you see these heroes for what they are, how can you not want to share it with people? How can you not want to say, look, this guy's a fraud. He's leading you down a road. He's telling you there's no audit of the Fed when the greatest open secret of government is that the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, the annual financial statement, is the audit of the Federal Reserve. Says so right in the frickin' law, in the Federal Reserve Act. But I bet 99% of the people who are all end the Fed, have never even read the Federal Reserve Act. That's how ridiculous this movement can get at times. It can be told things like that the Fed is pure evil and that it is this and it is that and it was created on an island by a bunch of bankers and that it's owned by the bankers and that the president was very sad that he signed it. All these things are not true. They're provably not true. Absolutely 100% provably not true and 0% provable to be true. They actually took quotes out of speeches made by, what's-his-name, who signed the Federal Reserve Act. A book of speeches. You can get the book on. You can get the book online. You can get the book in a bookstore. His speeches. His speeches were pro-Federal Reserve. And they take some of his speeches and they mangle him. And what was amazing is that they attributed that speech to what the Federal Reserve would do, when, in fact, his speeches were speaking of the current banking situation. So that quote that begins with the false, fallacious line that nobody can find a source to, I've done a most horrible thing to my country, or something like that. It's a false quote. It's attributed to him after he signs the Federal Reserve. Everybody uses the quote. It's a false quote. It's a made-up quote, but it's not a made-up quote. It's actually a quote from his book, which came out before he signed the Federal Reserve, on his speeches and all the things he said about the banking industry before he signed the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve is supposed to be a good thing. But you didn't know that. They're supposed to take control of the banking system, a banking system that was completely freaking out of control. Of course, it's not a good thing. It's a freaking plank of the Communist Manifesto to have a central bank. I'm not saying it's a good thing. Oh, Clint said it's a good thing to have a Federal Reserve. Grow up, you ass. Seriously. Don't take one thing I say and take it out of context. I'm showing my bitterness after years of idiots coming at me. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break. But I certainly hope that you got something out of this little talk. I'm trying to tell you, and I'll tell you this when I get back, that not only that government is the owner of all corporations, that no corporation can even be started without government permission, without being under government law. And so I want you to think about this for just a moment. Can you prove to me that every single corporation out there, from the smallest mom-and-pop shop to the farms to anything that's ever been incorporated into government, registered as a corporation of government, that you get the rights of use and protection benefits and all that, tax write-offs and everything, can you prove to me that every corporation out there is not part of government? Can you explain to me how it is that government is somehow separate from all these corporations, but that it makes the law of all corporations? That sure, it gives you a franchise, a little bit of freedom to act, but for the most part, you're paying taxes, you're paying tribute, you are part of government if you are a corporation, if you incorporate yourself. And this is why, of course, government can take it away, because it's property of government. This is why they can come in and inundate your property, eminent domain your property. Prove to yourself also that corporations are not all a part of government. They're created by government. Oh, sure, you sign the paperwork. You say, this is my person. Well, guess what? Your person is also property of government. It's not like you're making a corporation in the United States without a person. And all your persons, all your co-signers become one person, one legal entity, one false fiction. Corporations are fictions. They're not tangible. They're words. They're patented words. Put on the paper, all corporations are just merely part of government. Prove me wrong here. Well, the first thing you'd look at, who's your God? Who's your creator? Who created you? Government. Well, no, Clint Richardson created. No, Clint Richardson's part of government. It's property of government. It's a surname with a social security number. Couldn't have done it without my social security number, my tax ID number. I can't do any of these things without government's approval. Who makes my law? Well, who makes my law is my God. Well, that's government. Who do I pay tribute to? Who do I sacrifice to? Government. Who says what I can and can't do? Government. Who allows me licenses and permit? Government. At what point do we break away from government? Does a corporation have any freedom from government? At what point is a corporation just not a part of government? See, this is how I started to understand things. This is how I started to see the world. And once I saw it that way, everything made sense. It's no different, surprisingly, no different than the East India Company, the Virginia Company, the Connecticut, whatever it was, company, the railroad companies, all these different companies that are created. How about your Pennsylvania, whatever that is, the highway. There's so many corporations out there. They call them companies or authorities. You have education authorities that handle all the pension monies. Folks, these are just corporations of government. Whether it's Walmart or any other kind of municipal type of corporation, it's just part of government. Is it not? I mean, am I wrong here? I'll play a little song that I made. I made this when I was not, well, I was working, actually. I put this at the beginning of my corporate the Corporation Nation movie for a brief stint. This is actually the full song. So I'm sitting there. This is, you know, this is the time when I'm in my studio making sounds for movies and games and commercials. Right, I was an audio engineer, sound designer. And I would sit in my little windowless studio and eventually, you know, start listening to Alex Jones, the fucking gateway drug. And then was moving on to others. And sometimes when we didn't have any work, we were just told to basically practice our skills or work on something for our reels or whatever. And so I decided I was going to make some songs, not the traditional way. I was going to hand place everything without any... without any kind of timing or anything. I was going to do it all in my head and copy and paste so that the beat is perfect and this kind of thing. And so I created this song without any help, without any digital timing or things. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. It was just me putting thing on thing on thing on thing. So all these different sounds are all basically placed there, cut up and placed, and hard to explain unless you've ever done a sound wave of, you know, sound waveform music placement in Pro Tools or anything like that. But wow, long story. Just gonna play this. It's odd. It's definitely the sign of me being probably, this is probably 2007, 2006, 2007. Kind of when I was just really starting to wake up, just getting into Weird Chains, just getting into this kind of thing. And I knew everything was wrong. I just didn't know how to put it into words. And so I made this song. So hopefully you'll enjoy it. I'll be back in about 5.
Of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. In your hands, my fellow citizens, will rest the final success or failure of our cause.
America needs a full-time president. And a full-time Congress.
It tends to remain the master of its own house.
Congress.
Republican. Every dime that we've got is honest dollars. Republican honest dollars.
Try to warn the American people that a new generation of American
Republican
who have now taken over in the United States, have faith in God, which distinguishes us from the atheistic materialists who oppose us. Faith in God.
Republican.
From the atheistic materialists who oppose us. Faith in God.
Republican.
God.
We cannot forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Revolution.
God.
In your hands, in your hands, my fellow citizens, will rest the final success or failure of our cause. Success or failure of our cause.
President, people have got to have confidence in the integrity of the men who run for that office and who might obtain it.
President,
we will fail to comply with the will of the United Nations. Fail. We arrogantly rejected all warnings. Fail. The use of force to be avoided. Fail. Instead, he tried to make this a dispute between Iraq and the United States of America. Well, he failed. Leave Iraq or be driven out. Fail. The Middle East. The Baghdad. Fail. And he came back from Baghdad with no progress at all. Failed. The reach of peaceful resolution. Withdraw from Iraq. Withdraw from Iraq.
Restore pride at home.
Withdraw from Iraq. Withdraw from Iraq.
And respect abroad.
Withdraw from Iraq. The Middle East. the Baghdad, the Middle East. The Baghdad, comply with the will of the United Nations to reach a peaceful resolution. Withdraw from Iraq. We will fail to restore peace and justice. The Baghdad, the Middle East. The Baghdad, fail. The Middle East, fail. The Baghdad, fail. Fail. Defying the United Nations with open contempt, exhausted every means at our disposal. He could not prevail. Damage was being done to the fragile economies of the Third World, including to our own economy, by stalling and threatening and defying the United Nations. The Middle East, the Baghdad, the Baghdad, when we invaded the Middle East. Iraq, a member of the Arab League, a member of the United Nations, was crushed. Its people brutalized. War, war, war. We subjected the people to unspeakable atrocities. War. And among those maimed and murdered, innocent children. War. Moved out of Iraq in accord with the United Nations resolutions. War. The answer is clear. War. Move out of Iraq. War.
War. Hanging by the slenderest of threads. Capable. Capable of being cut at any moment. By accident. Or miscalculation. Or by madness. The weapons of war must be abolished before they abolish us.
So there you have it, that little ditty. Oh, it's funny to hear all the different misconceptions, you know, United Nations worship, that kind of thing. Well, you know, you learn. That was called Voices of Presidents Past. Voices of Presidents Past. You won't find it anywhere out there. Just my own little personal fun little deal. Good times, you know. And that's what I used to do to pass my time. I also made a less pleasant orchestra accompanied by farts. But, you know, that's another story. Let's reconsider here for a moment, you know, the concept of the corporation. The concept of the person, in other words, the person, the artificial person having the rights of natural persons, etc. The notion that you know, each and every one of us technically is a corporate entity. Our first name is incorporated with the state name, so the real is incorporated or mixed with the fiction. Admixed is the correct name. And so you become an agent for the principal, for government, and you go in pursuit of mammon to pay your tribute and sacrifice to government. It's the same thing. The corporation just acts a little bit differently, where its goal is, its stated goal is to, of course, create profits for its stake or shareholders. Most corporations are bound to that duty above all else. And if they do not fulfill that duty, they can be sued by the collective shareholders. And, of course, government, as a collective shareholder in every corporation in the world, is a party to some of those litigations against corporations who did not... it's frightening when you start reading into this, guys. It's... Well, it's organized crime on a level that it can't be put into words. I don't even know how to fully, you know, put it out there. But once you see it for what it is, once you understand the hierarchy of the system, then you kind of realize It's a global tyrant. I don't know what to say. It's a government, quote unquote, that has its hands in every industry in every possible way around the world. And without the pension system, without that investment scheme system that is sold to us as a benefit to us, which is why we accept it, we go with it, we participate in the evil. Without that, none of this could have been possible. China would never have been possible. The derivatives markets would not have been possible. Guess who the main investor in derivatives is? Government. You know, who owns all this toxic trash debt? Government does. Government gives loans to other governments. When we see that government is in debt, it's a lie, because government merely loaned that money to another municipal corporation, another government. Government borrowing from government, that is somehow a public debt. You see, this is the brilliant part about it. I mean, you can create an organized criminal syndicate that actually puts the expenses on the very people you're extorting. And what is more organized and criminal about that? I suppose what really gets me, though, I don't know. There's so many aspects of this we can talk about. What really gets me is that along the road of being just completely raped and extorted and exacted from, just having everything taken from us, our children are no longer our property, we don't own our cars, we don't own our homes, we have no holdings of any lands whatsoever. We're constantly in a state of trespass on private land, which is called public. We have no right to be on private land. We have no easements. We can only be on that quote unquote public places, public land. We have no ability to have private land in the true sense. And when it comes to this system that supports this whole thing, this whole system of extortion and investments, who's there to always talk prettily about it? Who's there always supporting it? Well, it's the multitude suffering from Stockholm Syndrome. Literally, it's the multitude suffering from a love of their kidnapper, a love of their pirate. And one of those loves, of course, money, because the whole system would come crashing down without money. The more and more, again, you see things for what they are, the more and more you understand that concept of that you can only have one God, either God or mammon. And that is a true statement. You can only have money or no money. You can't have both. You can't, because you can't have a system where everything is equal in value, meaning that everything that you see is priceless. Every life and every thing is, that you're supposed to act charitably and with love and kindness and goodwill and to ensure the wealth of others above yourself. You can't have that in a money system. It's impossible. Especially in a system where money itself is for profit. I mean, how fucked up is that? So we're sitting here, and because we all have a stake, just like the pensioners have their own unique stake in this system, and allow their money to be invested in the worst possible companies, the very companies that harm them, that they complain about, right? Well, so too do we all have this stake. It's called Social Security. It's our pension. Social Security is pension for the poor, really. you know, it's just enough to keep you in poverty level. And that's what the church is really for. The church isn't there for charity. The church is there to spread welfare. What is welfare? If I were to describe welfare in my own terms, as I understand it, it is to keep people at poverty level and no higher. It is not designed to bring you out of anything. It is not designed to help you in any other way than to subsist in your life that you might continue in poverty. And that state of poverty is very profitable for government. But it all backs down to money. It really all boils down to the fact that everything we're talking about today is fake. You know, this one of the great comforts I have, and I compare it to the same comfort that people get from God, that their image of God, which I've learned is the actual blasphemy, but that same feeling that people get from pretending that there is some form or image of God out there, and that they're somehow close and they're going to go see him. I'm sure there's a special place in hell for people who believe they're going to heaven. Let me say that again. There's got to be a special place in hell for those who actually believe that they're going to heaven. I get that same kind of comfort that I hear from people when they talk about God. I get it from the knowledge, the extreme and deep, utter understanding that all of this is fake. That none of this shit is real. All that stuff I just got done talking about, all the CAFRs, the financial reports, the investments, the money, none of it exists in nature. It has no substance. It has no blood. It has nothing at all to do with anything that has to do with life. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. It is pure fiction. And to me, that's the same exact thing as denying mammon. In other words, it's the same thing as saying, there's only two gods, God or mammon. You can't have both. The same thing as going back to nature. It's the same thing as recognizing that what God is nature. Reality, everything that's source. Nothing that is the fictions and imaginations of men. It's the same thing. When you can see the fiction for what it is, when you can unplug from the matrix and see it from the outside, when you can walk amongst its machines and its regulators, and see them for what they are, then you've left. Or at least you've gotten as far away as you can. But, of course, we're all still stuck in mammon, aren't we? You know, I know that there's so many people out there like me. There's so many people out there like me that have the same exact feeling that I'm having right now. And I get to, you know, one of the things I like to measure in the population, in the people, in the common Goyim people, especially those in this particular interest, this movement, this alternative news stuff. One of the things I like to measure is... hard to put into words, but the tone. What is the tone? And I get the feeling that the people are starting to wake up to the fiction. I get the feeling that people are starting to realize they're in a legal code, a legal matrix, an artificial womb that gives them false protection and security, makes them not think about everything that's wrong, puts them on drugs when they're feeling bad. I think people are starting to see the fiction. I think the tone is that everybody is starting to... care a little less. that people are getting the impression that maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing if this whole thing collapsed, that maybe it's time to think of something new. I don't know. That's my impression, that people are starting to see the fiction. Now, I saw it long ago and have been refining my way of talking about it ever since, but I get the feeling that people are actually starting to see the... And you wouldn't know it from daily life, but if you stop and you talk to people, which I do often, and you get a sense of people, and it's like everybody knows it's a lie. Everybody knows everything's a fucking lie. But we just keep participating in the lie. We know that the whole thing is a fraud. We know that our politicians are corrupt. We know that the whole system is a system of corruption. But we still have that hope that we can turn it around, that we can make it something that it used to be, even though it was never not corrupt. We have some... It's that damn word hope again. It's such a horrible word. That something's going to change, something's going to correct the system, and we can all stay in the Matrix and be happy in the Matrix. I don't know what to say. We can all stay slaves and be happy believing we're free when we're really... enslaved. None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who believe they are free, as Gautier is famously quoted for. None are more helplessly enslaved than those who believe they are free. How is that not the moniker of America? None are more helplessly and hopelessly enslaved than those who believe they are free. Why is that not on the flag instead of "Don't Tread on Me"? It's all fiction. Like I said, I can get deep into a conversation about something, money or taxes or financial systems, financial reports. And all I have to do to pull myself back out of that delusion, back out of believing that it matters, back out of believing that there is some continuity between the fiction of money and the reality of nature, that cow over there is really actually worth $2,000 and nothing else, nothing no more, no less, and that man over there, well, the law says I can't put a value on him, but I can extort him through employment, which means to use. As long as I'm not enslaving, I'm just using somebody or employing somebody, it's okay. I can extort them for low wages. And at what point do we come out of that? Or can we come out of that? I often ask, are we too late? Are the only people we can actually help our children? Do we have to tear our children away from this system to teach them to not fall for this system, because we already have, and there's really no way we're always gonna want to be put back in the Matrix, have the comforts and everything, but our children, maybe we can actually help and guide them and not have all of this fiction in their minds by the time they're 7 years old or whatever the Jesuit age is that they like to have their children. I don't know. I'm often asking myself these questions. Because, hey, we don't pull anybody out of the Matrix until they're, if they're over a certain age, right? Once you reach maturity and adulthood, which is legalized adultery, once you reach that point, once you get to that point, you can't pull anybody out. I've got an identity. What do you mean? You telling me to leave my identity? Are you telling me that I have to give up my name? You telling me that I have to give up my social security number that I used to go to hospitals? Are you telling me I have to give up my house, my car, my money, all the investments I've made? But those things are mine. Yeah, see, that's where it all falls apart. That's where the notion that, hey, everything I just mentioned again, all fiction. You don't own land or a home or a car or a child. what you own is a piece of paper with words on it that's called a title. Often it's certified. Often it's got a seal on it. But that's all you actually have. And this is why the Bible says don't respect titles ever. No flattering titles. Well, a flattering title on land is its title, right? I'm going to end this today with, you know, I've been thinking about doing a new show. And I've been thinking about calling that show Red Pill Sunday School. Red Pill Sunday School. Now, the idea of the red pill didn't come from The Matrix. It actually came from one of my favorite authors that I know of, anyway. It came from one of my favorite authors, which was Piers Anthony. Piers Anthony wrote the script for, wrote the book, actually, I believe. I mean, maybe it was someone else's, I don't know. I know I read it from Piers Anthony, and that was a book called Total Recall. In Total Recall, Piers Anthony presents the person with a choice to take the red pill and return from his schizoid embolism out of the little virtual reality trip that he was on, little vacation he was on, back home to the real world to make him come back from the subconscious. And then, of course, as everything, the Matrix movie basically took a bunch of science fiction genres, mixed them together, stole the simulacra and simulation concept from Jean Baudrillard, took a little bit of systems like beehives are a system, computers, a little transhumanism, a little fucking Satanism, made a movie out of it, and it's a horrible, 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 shitty movie when you actually understand the source of that movie. Which, again, simulacrum and simulation. But I digress. Red Pill Sunday School. I figured out something towards the end of this thing I've been writing. I finally figured out what the whole fucking problem is when it comes to religion, when it comes to the Bible, and when it comes to how we've been kept from the Bible because of religion, because of the state. You gotta consider the Bible as just any other book, any other source of information out there. Don't think of it as anything else. Don't think of it as attached to any religion, because, of course, the Bible information had to become before the religion. Religion is not the creator of the Bible. The Bible is the prop, the foundation, the furniture that a church or a religion uses to justify its existence, no different than the Masonic lodges as their own types of religions, who use the holy books as their furniture, the Talmud, the Quran, and the Bible. Does that mean that the Bible is Freemasonic? No. Does that mean that the Bible is Catholic? No. Does it mean that it's Methodist? No. Does it mean it's Jewish? No. It's knowledge. It's law. It's knowledge. Don't look at it as anything else. It's not religion. It's not. It's knowledge of the foundations of law. In other words, what is a foundation? Well, you can't have anything without a foundation. This is why you have so many groups out there, so many truths, so many truthers speaking different truths, sometimes opposed to each other. This is why you have such falseness out there in the news and media entertainment places, especially in the alternative realm, though. This is why nobody has the truth, because they don't even know what the word truth means. Think you do. You think you understand what truth means, but you don't. There's a reason they say God is the truth. Well, wait a minute, how can God be the truth? Wait a minute, God is a white-bearded man in the sky. No, no, that's religion. That's not the Bible. Why are you mixing religion with the Bible? Oh, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're entrained to do since you were a child. That's what public education is designed to do, is to keep you away from the Bible. Because if you had the information in the Bible, you wouldn't be allowing any of this shit to happen. If you really truly understood it, if you really truly knew it, you'd understand that everything we do breaks with the foundation of law. And I'm saying natural law. I think everybody knows that, because everybody says we got to get back to nature. We got to get back to the natural law. What you're really saying is got to get back to God. You see, here's the fallacy. The one great fucking fallacy that has created an entire industry, an entire movement, an entire freaking debate of atheism between atheism and Christianity, atheism and Christianity, atheism or evolution and creationism. Right? Do you know that these, and I finally understand this, I finally understand that we always choose one side or the other when in fact both sides are incorrect. Both sides are actually based on a fallacy or at best a misunderstanding, a mistranslation of a word. Now, what was the best way? What is the best way that we can begin the Bible? What is the best? Well, obviously, it's to understand what the fuck the word God means. What is this word God? Do you know anybody who knows what the word God means? Do you know where the word came from, why it's used? Do you have any idea what the original text of the Bible actually used in place of the word God? Because it wasn't God. You go out there and you ask this question to anybody, are you going to get a million, billion different answers about what God is. And why is that? Because, well, I saw a movie, and that's the interpretation I liked. Some Jew wrote it into a script, and I liked it. Because I read the Bible. Well, which language did you read it in? Oh, English. Oh, so you read it in a language designed specifically to make you illiterate, so that you can never actually get the message of the Bible because you're not going back to the original source. Yep, I've read it 5 times in English. I know it. I know it like the back of my hand because I've read it 5 times. I see. You know, I've shown the front cover of the dog food bag to my dog every time before I open it, so he knows what I'm feeding him. So I'm sure he knows what I'm feeding him. I'm sure he's read the ingredients, fully comprehends and understands every single fucking word, every single chemical, every single thing that's in that food, because he's read it 5 times at least. God, he's probably read it 20 times. You see, the whole thing, and this is so simple, it's such a simple, simple realization. It's so enlightening to me to realize this. So, so incredibly great to finally understand what was behind all this bullshit, all this debate. And I used to sit around and watch Dawkins and Hitchens before he died of cancer, watch these great debates between the creationists and the evolutionists and the Christians and the atheists and all these, you know, wonderful things, your fucking Ray Comforts and your Brett, what's his name from the old TV show, versus the infamous atheist or the infamous whatever. And they were so fun to watch. And it was like watching a reality television. They put each other down. But you know what? I'll tell you what they never talked about was the Bible. It's always about religion. Maybe the guy would quote out of the Bible to make a point, but they were never actually telling you what the Bible said. Because if they did that, the debate would be over. First of all, you wouldn't be having the debate because you would know what truth is. If you're having a dispute over what truth is, then you do not know what truth is. When you do know what truth is, it's unmistakable, it's undeniable, it's self-existent, it's self-evident. You don't question it. Everything else is fiction, remember? Oh, but money is real. No, it's not real. It's artificial. It's real can only be something created in nature. It didn't grow on a tree, did it? You didn't pluck that out of the earth, right? It's not something, it's not, i.e., a creation of God. Ah, so it's not truth. See, that's all God means is truth, reality. What is self-existence? The universe, earth, nature. These things are all God. Man, man's part of that. Man is part of the creation, right? Animals, dirt, trees. You go look at the definition of Jehovah, which, of course, there was no J. You go back and it's whatever it is, the four letters that they were so sacred that you didn't say the word of God. Why was it so sacred? Why did they keep it sacred instead of cursed? Well, you don't use, you know, what you hold sacred that is not of God is cursed. So all the altars and everything. So they didn't say the word God. It was almost like a superstitious thing. Besides, how can you possibly comprehend all of reality? All of, you sit around, for instance, you comprehend, where's the end of space? Where exactly does space end out there? And, you know, you can never come to an answer. You might come to some bullshit physics or scientific mathematical equation, which means absolutely nothing, except to the mind of the scientist, except to the mind of the mathematician, who thinks that their numbers actually equal reality. That's fine. That's simulation. I understand it. Simulacrum. Why doesn't anybody ever, why in those debates did nobody ever say, hey, you're wrong, and you're wrong, and I can prove it. I can disprove atheism by examining its very definition. And this is so, so important. First of all, why would you call yourself an atheist publicly? Why would you call yourself anything? The Bible says don't call yourself by any names, title, number, or any fucking mark of any beast, of burden, no animal. Right? So that there alone, you're breaking the foundational law of nature by pretending you're some fiction. Why would you call yourself an atheist? What does that even mean? It means the non-belief in something. Well, how can you positively declare a belief in nothing? How can you actually form a whole movement on the belief that something doesn't exist? That doesn't make much sense to me. I'm going to create a whole fan club, a whole fucking product line, a whole book line based on something that doesn't exist in my mind. And yet I have to have some knowledge of something that might exist before I can say definitively that it doesn't exist. But the problem is you can't prove a negative. You cannot prove non-existence. So the whole fucking thing goes up in smoke right there. But that's not all. You see, the beautiful thing is when you actually go and you define it. What is the definition of atheism? It has a very specific definition. It's not just, it means you ask the atheist, they're going to have all kinds of different answers. But what's the actual definition? Every source out there, from the ancient source, what does it mean? And it means something very specific. And this is what I want you to get through your heads. Because with this statement, there's no one out there that should not believe in God, quote unquote, Jehovah, i.e., after what I'm about to tell you. And you're going to find that that statement is a self-evident truth, what I just said. It's a self-evident truth. Why? Because it's literally impossible not to believe in God. Now, in Jehovah. But we can only know what that means if we actually define what the Bible was putting forward as the word Jehovah, as quote-unquote the highest supreme God of the universe. What is the definition of Jehovah? What is that definition of those four letters that were so sacred that nobody ever spoke? Because how can you possibly put a word on the entirety of everything as God? Well, atheism is defined specifically as the non-belief in the existence of God. Atheism is a non-belief in the existence of God. Okay. So I don't believe that there is a God of existence, a God that is somehow external from and over. I don't believe in some man in the clouds. That's a perfectly fucking reasonable response to what the church promotes in its witchcraft and magic. Okay, perfectly reasonable response. Is it a perfectly reasonable response, though, to the Bible and the definition and the intent of the word Jehovah? That's the question. Because I read the Bible with the belief that God in the Bible is this white-haired man that somehow comes and talks to certain people and has a physical form in the form of a man or some other burning bush, whatever. If I actually believe that in a literalist sense, or am I told that I have to believe that in a literal sense, well then, yeah, most people are going to say, well, that's bullshit. You can't make me believe in something like that. It's nothing I can see in nature. It's not self-evident. There's nothing self-evident or self-existent about that information. All right? Just as there's nothing self-evident about Robin Hood, there's nothing self-evident about King Arthur. I can't prove these people existed. But what I can do is learn from the story. I'll learn from the moral story that was told about these people, just like I can learn from the moral story of Moses, Jesus, etc. But the problem is, I have to know the very foundation of the Bible. What is the foundation of the Bible? God. Therefore, what is the foundation of law? God. Why is God all over the United States, even though the United States is completely corrupt? God. Why is the Bible in the court? Right? I mean, come on, think about this, folks. You can't escape it. There's some point where you're gonna have to acknowledge this. You're going to have to acknowledge it. You're going to have to acknowledge that you've been fooled in a way that I can't even put into words. You've been so put into a grand delusion that you've actually allowed yourself to not believe in yourself. Why do I say that? Because Jehovah is defined as all things, all everything. There's no word for it. All eternity, everything that is real, everything that is of nature, everything specifically that is existence. And when I say existence, I mean the truth about existence, which is what is real, not a creation of man, but a creation of nature or God, a creation that is an ongoing, continuous process of life and death. Creation was not an event, just like God or Jehovah is not an event. It is past, present, and future. It is life being created at this moment and dying at this moment. It is the passing of blood. It is the generational concept. It is the extinction concept. It is everything that goes along with the perfection of the design of nature. When there's too many sheep, the wolves start perpetuating. And when there's too many wolves, not enough sheep, the wolves start dying. That's a perfectly reasonable law of nature. That's why men have to be so damn careful, and they're not. What is the definition of God? That is the only question anybody should be asking, because without the definition of God or the intention of the word that was used in the old times to explain what God is, we cannot possibly understand what the Bible is telling us. There's no way we can read the Bible without the very foundational definition of the word God, let alone everything else, every other word in there that comes from a romantic, poetic language that we're trying to take literally. It's fucking ridiculous. Nothing worse than the logic of the literalist. The logic of someone who only knows the English language, which is specifically designed to cause illiteracy through not being able to be poetic or spiritual, however you want to look at it. That's why you say that God speak in verse and the slaves speak in prose. Prose is something not poetic. That's why the Bible's in verse. Because it's only for the gods. It's only for those who understand. You have to know, therefore, that Jehovah means existence. All that is in existence, that is life, that is energy, that is earth, universe, that is God. That includes you and me. It's humbling to realize you're just one little, tiny fractional part of God. And so is that deer equally, and so is that blade of grass. Everything's equal. There is no valuation. There's no mammon in here. There's nothing that you can look at that says, oh, that's not part of me. That's not part of God. That's not part of the universe. It's not part of everything that is the oneness of being. This is the intention of the word God. It is the same thing that I hear in fucking hippie groups. It is the same thing I hear in freaking supremacist groups. It's the same concept that everybody has. Every religion has it. This concept of oneness of being, self-existence. All that means is what is not a creation of man. What was here before man, and what will be here after man? Because to trust me when I say, there will be no lies or fictions left over when man dies. They're all creations of man. There will be no devil when the man dies, because man is the devil. Man is his own worst enemy, and he can only know his enemy if he knows himself. And that's what the Bible teaches. Know yourself. Know thyself, and do not take upon yourself any names or titles that would make you anything that you are not. Yeah, that includes everything from bank teller to doctor to lawyer to president to king to queen. Yeah, all those are false flattering titles. So what is the great fallacy? What is the one thing that destroys atheism, that atheism specifically believes in the non-existence of God? Atheism is a result of religion, not of the Bible. The Bible says God is existence. God is all of existence. You can't deny God without denying existence. You'd have to be a nihilist, an anarchist, to do that. And that, you know, most atheists go that way. It's a suicidal journey, from what I understand. You have to realize that if atheism is based on the non-belief in the existence of God, and the Bible says, it's basically unknown, you know, nobody seems to talk about this. The Bible says that God is existence, and the atheist doesn't believe in the existence of existence. As an atheist, I have a non-belief in the existence of existence. That's nihilism. And therefore, I tell you that everybody out there, in order to find peace, in order to find a way to live with each other, in order to actually live under the natural law, which is the law that is specifically put out in the form of an example, they call it Jesus Christ. I don't give a shit. You can rename it if you want, as long as you understand that Jesus Christ is simply a word that it translates to Jehovah is salvation. That's what it means. That's what Jesus Christ means. That means nature, reality, truth is salvation. That means get the hell away from fiction. Get the hell away from artifice. Get the hell away from technology. You know what technology is defined as? Art. What is art? Artificial. Artful, right? Technology means art. Art means technology. What is technology? It's the Matrix. Does that mean I have to get rid of the Mona Lisa? No, don't be stupid. It means don't respect the art over the reality. Don't take the replacement of something, the copy, the statue, the image, the God that is false over the real thing. What is truth? There's only one form of truth, and that is what is self-evident. What is another word for truth? God. What is another word for nature? God. What is another word for creation? God. See, God is a verb. Jehovah is a verb. It's an action. It's not a name. That's why they said it was a sacred name that no one used, because it's not a name. Now, in the Bible, they're going to use the word God. That's because the king calls himself God. So what I'm telling you, folks, is that before we can ever have any solution, before we can come together, we have to lose the fallacies. We have to lose the lies that have created these movements to put us against each other. Atheism versus... If evolution is true, then it's part of creation, you fucking morons. Because God is the verb that is creation. Therefore, evolution would be a part of creation. They're the same thing. Whether one happens or doesn't isn't even the question. See, we've been tricked. We've been fooled by the church and the state to externalize God away from nature, away, instead of realizing that we're all part of it. And unless we follow the laws of nature, the laws of God, We're fucked! It's the Foundation! Put the MK scope on ya. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open ya. The 57mm Mark 110. 220 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched, that's a bitch. Now we got it.